Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and this interview was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For the latest news and terms and conditions, go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and I'm here with Leonard Popovich, from the President of the Union of Winemakers and Oenologists of Russia. What a great title. How are you, Mr. Popovich?
Здравствуйте. Попробую вам за несколько минут доказать.
Well, one great hello for the UK in Wine Show from Mr. Popovich. We will do our best to translate it in normal, standard, good English. He will do his best to tell you the story about the nowadays Russian winemaking and about Russia, about the winemaking, wine consuming.
Perfect. Okay, now that sounds good. The translator we have here is Maya Lipper. And Maya works for the
Asti Group Exhibition Company, the company which is famous for its fairs, including the wine events. And so that is why we are here supporting the union and supporting the wine culture, the growing wine culture in Russia.
Perfect. Okay, just to start off with, I know nothing about Russian wines other than last year I came along to the London International Wine Fair. You guys were here, and I tasted some fizz that was okay. What is Russian wine about?
Про русское вино. Значит, вот рассказываем. So, if we're talking about the wine you at the moment don't know about, Mr. Popovich says that to make a good wine, to make a splendid wine, you need a ground, you need a good geography, you need a proper climate, you need people interested in this, and for sure, a bit luck. And we can assure you that Russia has a lot of such places.
Okay, I had a look at a map of Russia, and I tried some wines earlier, Russian wines. They seem to be looking around the Black Sea. You don't seem to go too far north, too far south.
In fact, you are right. If you are telling about the Black Sea, yes, we have the grounds that starts from the Caucasus Mountains, from the Black Sea, then further to Republic of Dagestan, to Caspian Sea, and even returning to an Azov Sea, and also along the Don River. So these thousands of hectares are the places where our wines are grown.
So is it all on the west side, or are there wine being grown more east or
southwest, if being clear, yes, southwest. Yeah.
Is it too cold in other places? I heard that there's some mountains that can make areas quite cold, and Russia's quite large, so it's quite continental.
The thing is, yes, you're right about the climate. It's really continental, and it has differences, especially we're talking about different vineyards, about the soils, about those grapes that are grown on hills. But this explains why we have such a wide assortment of wines. So actually, it's a bonus for us that we know how to do unique wines because of the unique climate we have.
I'm just trying to zoom in on geography first. If you're all by the Black Sea, and what's the other sea called?
Caspian.
Caspian Sea.
Azov Sea.
Azov Sea. Is that the Caspian Sea?
It's like
sea?
A triangle.
Yeah.
Triangle where is this winemaking zone.
So what is it? Black Sea, Caspian Sea. Okay, so you're in a triangle between
it. Triangle.
That sounds like you need the lake effect, where you've got the cooling effect from lakes and the warming effect. So it's cooler in summer and warmer in winter because you've got a large water mass nearby.
You are right about the climate and about the temperatures. And those vineyards who are close to the water, for sure, they are protected by the water and by this climate influence. But still, we have even vineyards safe. The grapes, they are covered by ground.
Oh,
covered
they bury
by
the
ground
grapes
during the winters. Oh, yeah. Yes, so that the grapes not to be frosted,
yep,
and so on.
Yeah, no, I've seen that.
And then the second question is, and why making there? And the explanation of the winemaking companies who are working in such hard conditions is that still in summer they have a very good statistics with effective temperatures, not worse than on the south of France. So that is why we have winemaking companies here. You know, we have Russian frost, so sometimes minus 30 degrees even.
So very, very cold.
But in summer, we achieve very excellent results. The winemakers say the more the grapes suffer, maybe the better wine will have. And when we cover the grapes with the ground, maybe she thinks this is forever. And then when we open it, actually it's a moment of renaissance for the grape. And all the best is giving in that lucky moment when she is alive again. And actually the winemakers, all the things he has to do is to just to take these grapes and make a good wine.
Yep. Okay, so how many wineries are there in Russia?
We would say the number of 150 or 180 wineries. And to be clear, about 5 years ago, why this number of winemaking companies varies? Only big winemaking companies were in statistics for making a wine. And for last years, we have more number with not just great companies, but also some... local farmers and small companies.
Okay.
Yes. And so actually more ground with vineyards we have. Now we have an increasing number of winemaking companies.
Okay.
I think that is in process. So we can't give you the final number.
Australia has 80% of their production from eight companies. So they've got lots of small producers, but the big ones are the ones who make all the volume.
If we're talking about Russia and about the volumes in Australia, so if we compare, 80% of winemaking is on 20 or 25 wine companies in Russia. For example, one of the companies has 7,000 hectares of the wine. Some more companies want 1 or 2,000, 5, 6 companies. And the rest of are the small companies in usual understanding of this word.
Yeah.
The most of companies, the most generally, are the companies with vineyards from the 100 hectares.
Okay, so even most of the companies are quite big. The reason I asked was because I see some similarities between, say, the Russian wineries and English wineries maybe 10, 15 years ago. But in England, they're historically quite small. So, you know, 5 hectares is...
So fortunately or unfortunately, 30 years ago, we had an area of 200,000 hectares for winemaking. Now we have 63,000 hectares. So we have another from the big to smaller. So actually the area is becoming smaller.
One winery at 7,000 hectares still makes up 63. So they're almost...
So, yes, one company covers about 10%, as you say.
Of production, yeah. So that's quite large, isn't it? Who is that company?
Kubanvino. And exactly this company has been awarded with very many medals from all the competitions. They have more wines to be presented on the different competitions.
Well,
Kubanvino.
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 And can you tell me, just how did that winery start up? Since it's such a large winery, is it sort of something that's evolved from the old Soviet days?
In 1996, several companies whose roots goes to the Soviet times, they have united their efforts and make the one big Kubanvino company.
Oh, okay. So...
Yes, using the most modern technologies, enlarging the area of those old vineyard areas. So they are enlarging their...
Okay, so... How was wine structured during the Soviet Union, and how did it change when the Soviet Union sort of collapsed, I suppose?
Actually, in Soviet times, we had the same companies as now. They were growing and making wine. They were growing grapes, making wine, and it was effective business. They have all been united in one holding, headed by the state structure.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Okay.
If we can name it as monopoly,
yep.
I'm not sure. Because actually each company, as a unique member, has its own business plan.
Yep.
But only the task was actually from the state.
Yep. No, I understand. So you got competing companies all owned by the state, but they've still got to try and produce.
Yes.
So Is that why you've got such large vineyards, because they were effectively state companies?
Yes, for sure. What we have now is explains that in Soviet Union, actually, everything was under state control.
Yeah.
And so, but state had the functions of control and of regulation.
Yep.
When they didn't have enough money, they were going to a bank, taking a credit, so growing grapes, making wines, and then giving back a credit. But how much credit they may have, it was also controlled by the state.
Yeah.
So it was an easy. So this is also the nuance of monopoly. And each company has been dictated the plan when the wine is ready, where it should be distributed.
Yep.
So it was dictated. And for sure, the people were happy.
Oh, yeah.
Because they didn't have any headache where to sell the wines, because they knew.
Yep. It sounds like Soviet era, large wineries in reasonably protected markets making wine. How has wineries or new wineries come into effect since the breakup of the Soviet Union?
It's a very interesting question. So if we're talking about the period from 1992 to 2000, yes, it was a time when there was no anymore any holding, any support. So actually some old winemaking companies from Soviet times, they keep on, but the independent struggle for surviving while working in this wine business. Actually, we can say that in 2000, that would be a 2000 year, the Russian people, they have realized what actually business means. And then it was a reason for two further processes. So the first way was the old companies with new owners who have proved their good management for the previous 10 years. And the second way was completely new people with the budgets who started a wine business from the very beginning, from the zero.
The new wineries, how big are they? Are they really big again, or are they smaller?
Both. So, for example, the company, but with 7,000, they still keep their strong positions. It's an old company, but there are new companies starting from the very zero. For sure, they have less area than these old, but still they're increasing. And what is 10 years for the winemaking, actually?
Yeah.
And exactly, even you have the chance, so that is why we show the wide assortment of old and new companies, because for 10 years it's actually one period when the companies already have some result and the wine to show, and the competitive wine, mm-hmm. to even these with large vineyard. And even we would say that exactly these new companies give the impulse to the whole winemaking story.
How many new companies have started since 2000?
10, 12, not more. But exactly from the 2000, we have decreasing number of new winemaking companies.
And what is the average size of these 10 or 12 new companies?
30, 50, 80 hectares.
Around there. So it's good size though.
There are some specifics about the Russian legislation that didn't make able the story with more winemaking companies. So we had a problem, and people who even were ready to start this business, there were a lot of problems. And this year we have some changes, fortunately. And in the nearest time, we would be happy after all these laws have been confirmed. We are expecting, and we would be happy to have the winemaking companies, as you are telling about, as in UK, with 3-5 hectares. We do believe that it's time for them as well.
Yeah, although you need a bit of land to make a wine of economic value. I think 5 hectares or less is a bit small myself. All right, let's talk a wee bit about the wines. Last year, I tried some sparkling wines, and they were okay. I wasn't blown away by them. And I tried a couple of wines just earlier, a Pinot Noir, a Chardonnay, and an ice wine. And they were all quite nice wines. First of all, what are the main grape varieties grown in Russia? And are there any indigenous grape varieties you think are really good?
We have two places in Russia with the indigenous varieties, exactly. Where the grapes are growing for thousands of years. In Dagestan, if we're talking about Dagestan, 4,000 years. On Don River, along the Don River, 1,000 years. Dagestan and right side of the Don River are these two places where you can find indigenous varieties for Russia. So, and even on the fair, on our stand, you can also taste some these sorts, Sibirkovi, Krasnostop Zolotovsky, Tsemlyanskiy Chornyy. And if we're talking about Krasnostop Zolotovsky, one of the wines has won the medal last year and this year as well on Decanter. So these are the wines that are not just unique, but they are appreciated by the international judges. For sure, they differ in taste and aroma from the wines that Europeans used to drink.
Mm-hmm.
But for sure, we also have many European sorts. Cabernet, Merlot, Chardonnay, Shiraz, Pinot Noir. But there are a lot of experiments, especially in those new companies we were talking about. Mm-hmm. So they are making their own risking, but still trying to do something. And what they do, even in the area of 50 hectares, they're experimenting and trying to work with 15 to 18 sorts from all around Europe, just mm-hmm. to see.
Yep.
Now the world is fortunately opened for the country, so the Russian winemakers are looking for the best sort to be grown on the Russian land. So the first story is indigenous varieties. We have classic as well as other countries. And the third way is looking for some sorts, the best variant to be grown in Russia.
And what are the most common grape varieties now?
Cabernet Sauvignon is the most popular one.
Is it? And then any others?
The story about the sorts, Mr. Popovic just wants to say some words about the history. If we are talking about all these nowadays areas, 63,000, the half of the wine... 63,000
hectares.
Yes, the half of the companies have been run by the Soviet selectioners, who has the task to have the grape with maximum volume, and that could stand the frost. So actually that is why we had the standard sorts and no any outstanding wines. And for example, they used Aligoté. So in France, maybe they would say it's not the best one, but in Russia, Aligoté makes the good result. We can't but not mention Chardonnay and Merlot as well. Yes, experimenting with all the sorts. So actually, it was the answer on your question about the... So some three or four, and experimenting and looking for some new.
Okay. In Russia, what do people prefer? White wines or red wines? Import or local?
About 10 years ago, the 60% of consumers preferred the red wines. The rest of 40, white wines. Now we would say 50-50.
Oh, okay.
30% of the wines imported in Russian market is in bottles. 70%, half from the own grape, half from the Spanish, Italian, Argentina grapes, from the bought
yeah.
grapes.
Yeah, so 30% is imported in bottles, 70% is imported in bulk.
Imported wine in bottles, 30%. Oh, so then the rest of the wines is 70% wines produced in Russia, the half of which, okay, 40% is from the own grapes and 30% from the wine bulk. From the Argentina, Spain.
And then the wines are made in Russia. So they
yes.
bring juice in and they make it. Okay, so let's just recap. So 30% of wine is imported in bottle. Of the 70% of wine that's made in Russia, 40% is indigenous grapes.
Exactly.
And 30% is brought in as grape juice and then
Thank you.
Made into
Thank
wine.
Thank you for the... Yes.
Is that right?
Yes.
Perfect. Okay, so bringing grape juice in and making wine is a big part of the industry.
Yes. Today, and Mr. Popovic will explain why he thinks this situation would be the same for the next 10 and 15 years. The consuming of wine in Russia is growing rapidly. We don't have enough own grapes, so actually we have two solutions, to buy or to import foreign wines. Because if consumer wants wine, we have to give them.
Yeah. A lot of people in different countries, they quote how many liters of wine per year that each person drinks.
42,011, about 8 liters per person per year.
So that's what, like 10 bottles of wine a year per person. How many bottles of vodka?
If we're talking about vodka, 12 to 15.
Oh, okay. So wine almost keeps up with vodka.
30 years ago, the statistics was 20 liters of wine per person per year. So actually, don't be surprised that the wine is so close to vodka. And the same was for vodka.
20 liters. What type of person drinks wine in Russia? Is it, you know, is it a drink for the wealthy people, a drink for the middle classes?
If we're talking about the consumers, so not more than 20 to 25% of the whole Russian population prefers wine. Those who regularly drink wine, not more than 10, 15%. About 60 or even more are the women. So the consumers are not just rich people, but people who are taking care about their health. For sure, if we're talking about the top wines, it is for the middle and upper class. We want to believe, and the statistics says that the middle class is growing in Russia. We want to believe. So that is why we hope to have some more consumers of wine.
It was interesting that you said that, you know, you consider wine to be a more healthy drink to, say, vodka. Is that the belief in Russia that, that wine is a healthy option?
Yes. Well, we have the rest of 70-75% of people who still prefer vodka, but Mr. Popovich believes that the half of this population can turn to wine. But for sure, we will have another half that will keep on drinking hard spirits. And yes, there is belief that this is more healthy, and if you want to live long, better drink wine, okay, than vodka.
How much is wine in Russia to buy? In the UK, the average bottle price is around, oh, I can't quite remember, it's around £4.50.
£4.50, okay.
Is a typical average bottle price in the UK.
You're asking about the Russian wine or the imported wine?
Both.
So the first one about the Russian wines, about the prices for the Russian wines, from £3 to £5, there's a middle average price. And the 70% of the Russian wine is for even less, £2.50, £3.
Yeah.
But the quality is questionable for this price.
Yep.
So that is why we would recommend, and that you can taste a good average wine is still in the price category from £3 to £5.
Okay, and how much duty is on wine in Russia? How much tax? And the answer too much is wrong.
Okay, we will give you the illustration. If you are buying a wine in Spain for the 70 euro cents, after all the custom clearance, it will be about 1 and 2. So plus 30-40% price was from 70 euro cents after custom clearance.
€1.20.
But on the shelf and in the store, on the shelf, you can even find it for 5 euros.
5 euros. Yeah, okay. That's about what happens in the UK. £5 bottle of wine would have about 50p's worth of wine in it. So that's actually comparable to the UK duty rates. One last question before we close it out. One of the big innovations, well, not even an innovation, but the big improvements for the quality of the wine in the UK over the last 10-15 years has been a college called Plumpton College, where the winemakers have done formal training. Up till about 15 years ago, there was no formal training. How do people learn to make wine in Russia?
At first, we have a structure of institutes where you can graduate from the institute and have the diploma of the winemaker. In Moscow, in Krasnodar, in Rostov, and in some more cities. It's a story about the winemakers, those who are making the wines. So they can enter the institute for that. But still, these even people with a winemaker diploma, they go to business and they are being involved in trade, selling the wines. And that is why for such people, we have some more institutions, some more schools or colleges, I don't know how to call them, in Moscow, predominantly in Moscow and in St. Petersburg, where you can know more about the profession of sommelier, about the real wine expert, wine judge. And as a rule, these kind of education structures have been founded by the importing companies, big successful importing companies who are bringing this culture of consuming wine to Russia.
Yep.
And that is why they make such educational structures. Yes, and the graduates from such schools and colleges, then they can find work in restaurants, in Horeca, as sommeliers, and even in those companies who were the founders. And we would say, we can really say that for last years, we have a strong tradition by inviting the foreign experts, relevant, first-rate foreign experts, to come and learn our winemakers and our wine business people how to do, how to grow, how to sell.
But where do the people who make the wine, the oenologists, where do they train?
Oenologists, they belong to the institutes, university. I don't know how
okay.
to call it. The people with the classic education that lasts at least for 5 years, because all these sommelier schools, this is something that lasts not longer than 6 months. So
yeah. All right then. I think we'll wrap it up there, Mr. Popovich. Thank you very much.
Thank you.